It's Monday.
It's July 13th.
And the word of the day is giggle. It's borrowed from Tagalog, and it means the overwhelming urge to squeeze adorable things, often a bit too hard. Used in the sentence, hug a pug and kegel that bagel, but resist the giggle for a beagle.
Okay, right. I get the giggle. It's like when you see Jude Bellingham's hit an extra time winner in a tense quarterfinal. You just want to giggle that boy's brains out. I get it. I completely get it. 100%.
Understood. Absolutely.
I'm Michael Marshall.
I'm Heath Enright. And broadcasting delayed from America's Far Center and across the pond, we are the Skepocrats.
On this week's episode, Nigel Farage will argue that, if anything, he's too innocent.
Mitch McConnell is busy hanging out with a cat and some uranium in a secret box, I think.
And Donald Trump will call FIFA to tell him they just need to find him three more goals.
But first, the rest of the intro music. Joining me for headlines today is my fellow skeptic rat, Michael Marshall. Marsh, as we all know, a podcast is between one man and one other man, and we splain stuff, just like God intended. You excited for a little two-hander?
Oh, God, I am. You know, I've never wanted anything more than doing a two-hander with you, Heath. That is all I've ever wanted out of life. Like, those are the two guys, I call them the comedy ballast. That's what I call them. That's, I've always called them that.
Fantastic. And I was, you know, the Euro grip for the two-hander, so we're going to have a good time. And considering all the major grievances we have about the news of the world, we actually started last episode with a chance to air a petty grievance. And I want to give you a chance to participate. So anything petty you'd like to rant about real quick?
Okay, yeah. So I know this makes me a bad Englishman. I know I should just like lean in and, you know, get into the party spirit of things, but I cannot stand the English national anthem. I genuinely can't stand it at all. For six games now at this World Cup, I've had to watch whoever we're playing, like they whoever we play against, they're passionately yelling along with some rousing patriotic song, only to then have that like sheepishly followed with our near funereal drone of a dirge that is our national anthem. Like, yeah. France get to talk about the enemy's impure blood watering their fields.
Very exciting.
Norway sing about the legendary night that lowers dreams upon our earth. And what do we have? Thing that doesn't exist. Do a solid for the thing that shouldn't exist. Yeah. I hate it so much.
Yeah, I don't like ours either. Like France, they got the Marseillaise. It's in
it's
the
great.
1812
so
overture. Very jealous. Yes.
Yeah.
Okay, real quick. My petty grievance. Butternut squash. Overrated. That's right.
Ooh.
I said it. Overrated.
Even as a soup, you can make a good soup.
Okay, I do enjoy that soup, yes. Okay. Somewhat overrated. And we also have a candidate of the day, Heather Cox Richardson. Or, most importantly, anybody other than Graham fucking Platner.
Yep.
We're looking for anyone in the entire state of Maine who cares about working class people and, importantly, definitely never did any raping. Also, you know what? No tattoos. Just to be safe. I don't hate tattoos. I'm just saying, to be safe, none of those.
Okay, but what if they had a tattoo that said, definitely never did any raping?
Okay, good question. Okay, but then we just find out they, like, got that tattoo to cover up the, like, did a raping tattoo or something like that.
Yeah,
hence, no tattoos as a rule. Let's just be safe.
Okay, that's fair.
Fuck. So it's three checkboxes, and it seems like this person has to exist somewhere in Maine. But my favorite pick, Heather Cox Richardson. She's a professor, an amazing historian, and the author of a fantastic Substack called Letters from an American. Sounds like she's not actually interested in running for Senate, but she would be fantastic at the job. Other options include Shana Bellows, the Maine Secretary of State, McDreamy from Grey's Anatomy, Patrick Dempsey was mentioned. Okay. A beer guy named Dan Kleben, and a lager. Sorry, confusing. Not the beer type, lager. A lager.
Yeah. Okay.
A guy named Troy Jackson who has logged.
Professional logging. Yeah,
yeah,
makes sense.
There you go. Or again, anyone who checks the three fucking boxes. Let's go. All right. In our lead story tonight, NATO still exists. And at least for the moment, the United States continues to be a member. NATO held a summit in Turkey last week, and we actually got a little bit of good news. NATO pledged about $80 billion in military aid to Ukraine during each of the next 2 years. Bad news, NATO still has to let Donald Trump show up at the meetings, and he gets to talk while he's there. It went badly.
Yeah. And look, the thing is, if you're Ukraine, there is a monetary value below which it's just not worth having to listen to him talk. Like, $80 billion is definitely above that line. But there is a line where, you know, you'd like them to just keep the tanks as long as the senile guy in the stupid tie doesn't have to waste your time by speaking.
There's a fucking number. Yeah, I bet it's close. So, in fairness to Trump, that sounds insane, but he did claim he's in favor of the increasing support to Ukraine, including a license to produce Patriot missile defense systems. But everything else from Trump was stupid, tragic, or stupid and tragic, as usual. Also, he cheated in the World Cup. Okay,
yeah,
we're going to get to the details of cheating in the World Cup a bit later. But for now, just be aware that NATO leaders had to secretly agree ahead of time they wouldn't talk about the cheating in the World Cup because Trump gets easily distracted and they still have to deal with this idiot about important global issues.
Yeah, it's so bad. Like, I would joke that, you know, it's almost as if the world leaders have to pretend not to notice that he shit himself. But the thing is, they've definitely had that conversation as well. They've absolutely had that conversation.
Yeah, that was the thing with Mitch McConnell, too. We're going to get to that as well. So one of the issues that drew lots of attention at the summit, as you might expect, is Donald Trump's insane war against Iran that's fucking up the entire world economy and is cruel and tragic. I could swear that Trump recently said we had a deal all worked out. He said that for the 39th time, approximately. Turns out that was incorrect. The memorandum of understanding from a few weeks ago didn't have the ironclad staying power that its name evokes. The U.S. military launched a new series of attacks early on Wednesday of last week. They've done some more since. They're claiming it was a retaliation for attacks by Iran against commercial tankers in the Strait of Hormuz. And when Trump spoke to reporters from the summit that day, he said the memorandum and the understanding, I guess, are both done. He says it's all done. Also, he confused Japan and Iran because they rhyme. No, they don't. During a news conference with President Zelensky of Ukraine, Trump got a question about the Patriot interceptor missiles, and he told a story about a U.S. aircraft carrier getting fired on earlier this year. According to Trump, quote, "We had 111 missiles shot by the Islamic Republic of Japan, and every one of those missiles was knocked down." End exact quote.
Okay, are we definitely sure that was a mistake? Because all of our attention has been on Iran. What if the whole time, like, the Islamic world has been quietly conquering East Asia when we weren't looking? Like, is this the creeping Sharia that we've been warned about this entire time? They've just crept further and further east. Like, I've been to Japan, and I'll tell you, I didn't see a single church, not a single chapel, zero crosses, zero crucifixes. It's almost as if there's no Christianity left there at all.
Interesting.
But there were a lot of little bells and gongs in most of the public spaces in places. And I can only assume those bells and gongs, you ring them to get the attention of a nearby imam or mufti. That's what I think those must be.
Very possible. And, like, okay, let's assume it's a verbal typo. She said the wrong word. I needed to hear a follow-up question. Like, have we always been at war with East Asia, Donald Trump? Something like that. Any kind of follow-up. Okay. Moving on to another moment from the summit, Trump spent a bunch of his time complaining about NATO countries that did not help him fuck up the world economy by starting a war with Iran. He got especially mad at Spain because they didn't let him use their military bases. But I will say, your boy Keir Starmer, he did okay. He did all right. And I'm pretty sure everything's going great for the PM.
Yeah, don't look it up. He's crushing it right now. Do not look into it.
Starmer allowed Trump to use UK bases, quote, "in the collective self-defense of the region." That being said, Starmer refused to get involved in the war directly, which led to a rebuke, but a more mild rebuke from Trump. He called it weird, and Trump said of Starmer, quote, "this is not in the spirit of Winston Churchill," end quote. So Mark, is that about accurate about Winston Churchill and Trump?
Yeah, it's not in the spirit of Winston Churchill in the sense that Starmer didn't respond to the conflict by getting shit-faced and then starving 3 million people in Bengal. So it's not in that spirit, I guess.
You're being generous. You're finding an interpretation. Yes, and. All right, that brings us to my favorite moment, I think. About 10 minutes after confusing Japan and Iran, during that same press conference, Trump points to Zelensky, directly points at him. He's sitting right next to him. He points to him, and he asks all the reporters in the room if they have any questions for President Putin. Obviously, he just said the wrong word again. And it doesn't really matter. I guess you say the wrong word sometimes. He could have just said, oh, sorry, I meant Zelensky. But Trump's unbridled sociopathy wouldn't allow that. So he immediately launches into a lie to cover himself. He doubles down and he says, do you have a question for President Putin? Not Zelensky, Putin. What would you like to ask Putin? Because I'm going to ask him that question.
Oh, and it's so ridiculous. Like, what's totally insane about this whole thing is that all of the journalists like actually do try to move on and ask Zelensky a question and just ignore the fact that he got the names wrong way around. And Trump then brings us to a stop and forces them to come up with a question to ask Putin.
He wouldn't let him do it to go along with his lie. Insane. Yeah.
So one of them just asks, when is he going to end the war? And Trump says, that's a good question. I don't think I've ever asked him that question.
Is it a good question?
Well, that's an insane response from the guy who's meant to have been trying to broker a peace deal this whole time.
Like, sure is.
Obviously, it is a lie, but he's managed like to somehow lie in a way that makes him seem even more incompetent and stupid.
Almost impressive.
Because the thing is, what if it's true? What if he hasn't ever asked Putin that question? What if that's all it would have taken? Like, he just meets with Putin and asks, can you not? And bang, invasion of Ukraine over, art of the deal.
Come on, buddy. I never tried this, but just like, how about stop? Can you stop? God. All right. Just one other quick note about the summit. Trump arrived in his brand new Air Force One, thanks to the no strings attached generosity of the Qatari royal family. Well, okay. Not brand new. It's a 2012. Gently used, low mileage, single owner, new tires, as is. Okay. Well, not single owner, maybe two owners. And we're told it only cost the American taxpayer about $1 billion to get the free gift, you know, after we paid for the undercoating and the military upgrades you have to do to make it Air Force One and removing all the spyware that you have to do to make it Air Force One. And even with the military upgrades to the new one, the previous jet from 35 years ago is still safer, apparently. When Trump was leaving the summit, the Secret Service told him he had to use the older jet as Air Force One for security reasons. Trump tried to lie and say the brand new 2012 was getting sent somewhere else for like a big showing so people could check it out. But then real news got reported and he hates that.
Yeah, so, he sure does.
That was fun. All right, we're going to take a quick break for a word from our sponsor, Quince. It's summertime, and you know what that means for me? Being mediocre at golf. And when you're frustrated by a small white ball, there's nothing more important than feeling comfortable. Well, luckily for me, Quince has me covered all season long. What's Quince? I said to myself as I marked a point on the scoreboard. It's a great place to get well-made, comfortable essentials for a reasonable price. For example, Quince's 100% European linen pants and shirts are breathable, easy to throw on, and the summer upgrade your rotation needs starting at just $34. Their tees are soft enough to live in all day, and the lightweight cotton sweaters are exactly what you want when summer nights cool down. And everything at Quince is priced 50 to 80% less than similar brands. They work directly with ethical factories and cut out the middlemen, so you're paying for exceptional quality, not brand markup. For me, it's the Flowknit Breeze Performance Polo. I got a few different ones, and they're my go-to shirts for being furious on the course in comfort and style. And it's not just clothing. Quince has become a trusted favorite for everything from home to travel to everyday essentials. Make your summer wardrobe easier. Go to quince.com/skeptocrat for free shipping on your order and 365-day returns. Now available in Canada, too. That's quince.com/skeptocrat for free shipping and 365-day returns. quince.com/skeptocrat. What's Quince? Already told you. 2 points.
And we're back. And next up in headlines in Over the Shills and Farage Away news. Following May's local elections here in the UK, we saw huge gains for Reform UK. And you would have thought that their leader, Nigel Farage, would just be on top of the world right now. His party have been leading in the polls for some time. He managed to shrug off all those pesky stories about how much he used to racially abuse the Jewish classmates in his school when he was younger. And he still got that sweet part-time gig as the elected representative for Clacton-on-Sea. And I know being the MP for Clacton-on-Sea, it sounds like a whole thing, but like, don't worry, they mostly let him work from home at one of the many homes he has bought for him by anonymous rich donors. And your parliament doesn't really mind if you skip out on the occasional 77 consecutive votes since May, as long as you do vote, for example, 5 times in 4 months.
Yeah, he's probably just hanging out with Mitch McConnell. Pin in that, by the way. We'll get back, like I said earlier, to Mitch McConnell.
Yeah, but yet despite all of that, poor Nige has been feeling a bit blue of late. And what's happened to him, you might ask? Did someone borrow his favourite book of Hitler Youth songs without asking him? Or did he not get invited to his good friend Donald's big birthday party? Did he have to see a brown person that one time?
D all the above? Is it D?
Well, it's actually worse than all the above.
Okay.
What happened was people quite rudely asked him where all of his money came from. Specifically, they found out that Christopher Harborne, who's a British-born crypto billionaire living in Thailand for tax reasons, he made a previously undeclared £5 million donation to the Nigel Farage Deserves to Be a Millionaire Foundation. And Farage, he insists that money, it's nothing. That's just a personal gift from a good friend, which was long before and entirely unrelated to Farage's election campaign to become an MP. Which is why he didn't tell the Parliamentary Standards Committee about that, like you are required to do for any large donation that's been made during or even a year prior to you being elected as an MP.
Oh, okay. Right. You guys have rules about not buying elections. It took me a second. I was like, what's happening right now? This is just like normal politics.
Yeah, no, they're great. Okay. They're good. They're good.
You have some rules. Okay.
So you might remember, I talked about this on episode 270, and I included Farage's varying excuses for why he has the money, including that it was a personal and entirely unpolitical gift that he was given in order to spend on security. Mm-hmm. And also it was a reward for bringing about Brexit, not all of which can be true at the same time, but all of which can definitely be false at the same time.
Brexit wasn't political for him. It was more, no. You know, like emotional, spiritual, sexual. It was a sexual crypto reward for Brexit.
Yeah, it was. Sexual. Now, the thing is, despite Farage insisting that he's done nothing wrong in any of this and absolutely nothing wrong, this story just would not go away. And so this week, he addressed the nation live on BBC, which, like, okay, BBC, over here a second, don't give airtime to the leader of the country's joint fourth biggest party, live and unedited, in the middle of a political scandal with no way of vetting in advance what he was going to say and also no option at the end to put questions to him afterwards. Journalism better, BBC News. That's terrible.
Okay. I want Marsh follow-up to be a law. I've thought about this a lot. This happens all the time. Every time I hear a shitty politician say almost anything, I have this fantasy. Like, the floor opens up below them and they like slide down into some sort of cage. And then you're there and you conduct the mandatory follow-up interview and you ask them questions. And they have like a shock collar or something. They have to answer.
Oh, that sounds good. Yeah, yeah, I could go for that.
Be reasonable with a shock. So, okay, what did old Nige have to say on BBC News?
be reasonable or else is what yep. I would be. Yeah. So yeah, what we actually got from Farage at 2 p.m. on Tuesday of this week was just a litany of lies. It was like a "woe is he." It included the fact that he is apparently the most physically and verbally attacked public figure or politician in modern times, is what he said. Very quick fact check on that. Labour MP Joe Cox was murdered by an extremist in 2016 while in office, and also Tory MP David Amos was stabbed to death in 2022.
Feels extreme compared, yeah.
I guess each of them was only attacked once when they were killed. So Farage might be ahead on just pure numbers alone, I guess.
It's a numbers game. It's a numbers game. It feels like he knows he's on the right-wing fascist, like, team, but the B team, and he's trying to like talk his way off the bench now, you know, just constantly jealous of Trump and Putin, hoping for one of those big moments, like the, you know, an ear graze and he can fight or something. Yeah,
exactly. I mean, had he almost died in a plane crash many, many years ago, pre-Brexit, everything like that. These days, that plane crash, he would be like blaming the deep state and the communists for that 100%. Absolutely would.
Maybe it was them.
Yeah, could have been.
They have time travel.
Do better, communists in the deep state. Do better.
You got a time machine.
Still, like the money shot of this lengthy, publicly broadcast self-pity party was Farage announcing that, even though he has never done anything at all untoward in the slightest, and every single rule was scrupulously followed perfectly,
really?
He was resigning his role as MP for Clacton.
That's weird.
So... okay, good news. You might be thinking Clacton on sea. You know, they're going to have to find someone else to, you know, never represent them in Parliament and never attend the constituency office to see to their well-being.
All right. The search begins for the cream of Clacton. Is that what you're saying?
So stupid. Well, the thing is... that's not what's going to happen, because Farage explained that while his resignation would actually result in a special by-election, he'd be standing in that by-election in order to represent the people of Clacton.
Ridiculous.
He pointed out that only the people of Clacton-upon-Sea can judge him, which is very literally not true, that the Parliamentary Standards Committee will very much carry on judging him. You know, if he resigns and then he runs, then he wins again, they just... pick the case right back up again and carry on judging him.
Sure, yeah. So he's like the little kid playing tag, and he called timeout for his made-up ankle sprain, and he's going to do a time-in. He's going to like pop back up. He's going to be just fine. Like every lying soccer player who takes that dive and does 19 barrel rolls, and then they're fine if it doesn't get called.
Okay, Jed Spench was clipped up from behind. The defender came through the back of him. That penalty should never have been overturned. Force of habit.
Marsh.
I'm not used to us winning. This is weird. I can't do it. It's so strange. But yeah, so there is going to be a lot for the standards inquiry to go on when it does resume. Because Farage is saying, only the people of Clacton-on-Sea can judge me. But when asked... okay, are you going to give them all the information that they need to judge you, including all the financial information that you're being judged on? He was like, no, very much just like vibes, essentially. What do you like me as a person is essentially it. But the Standards Committee have got all that information, and they are going to carry on doing their inquiry. And the thing is, later on Tuesday, and I'm sure this is a total coincidence that it just happens to be the day that he chose to go live to the nation to resign from the fourth biggest party in the country. On the same day, The Guardian happened to break a story that, because Farage is a politically exposed person, his bank reported him to the National Crime Agency over that £5 million donation because they were worried it might be laundered money.
Crypto? No way.
Yeah. And rather than give a response to The Guardian to those allegations, Farage instead chose to quit live on television, as anyone would do if they were wholly 100% innocent.
Okay, it seems like laundered money would be an issue for non-politically exposed people too. You're just like not supposed to have that. But also, he seems to think the bank now like unreports the giant pile of crime money, and it's no backsies when he immediately becomes a politician again the next day.
Yeah, either that or the people of Clacton-upon-Sea can judge that money not laundered by him going and doing a local election campaign, which, again, isn't going to work. When people interviewed like voters in Clacton-upon-Sea, some of Farage's supporters said, I just think they're coming for him. It's a witch hunt because it isn't a crime to own more than one house. Like,
what?
Yeah. The money laundering is the crime.
Nobody's talking about owning houses here.
Yeah. So not great. And actually, that story in The Guardian, that actually follows a totally separate story by the Sunday Times about the mother of one of Farage's close confidants who gave Reform UK at least £1.75 million, a separate £1.75 million to the £5 million, despite, as various newspapers have observed since this came out, her being of relatively modest means. So where did she get £1.75 million to donate to her political party from? Well, her son is a guy called George Cottrell, a.k.a. Posh George. That is his real nickname, Posh George. He's also a close advisor to Nigel Farage, and he refers to Farage as Daddy, also a real thing, a real detail in this story.
Oh, like Mark Rutte and Trump. They have a nice relationship. That's cool.
Yeah, yeah. Now, he is a cryptocurrency entrepreneur who just so happens to have been convicted of fraud in the US and served time in the US. And he's also a man who was selling like money laundering services on the dark web. And he's the guy who published a book with the very real title, How to Launder Money.
Come on. Okay. So cryptocurrency happened. Just what it does happened.
Yeah.
Hidden currency got used to hide currency. Shocking. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Also, I got to say, if giving money to Nigel Farage is laundering, that money was fucking filthy.
Yeah, so dirty at that point. Yeah, completely.
Yikes.
So Farage's plan here is to force this by-election by resigning and therefore shift the focus away from his dodgy finances by going on the attack against the candidates who stand against him and hope that, you know, if he wins, and given the margin he already held in Clacton, he probably is actually going to win that by-election. He can then just argue, well, the voters have decided I did nothing wrong. The voters have decided that everything is above board and we are a democracy and we listen to the voters. That is his plan. That is a flawed plan for a couple of reasons. Now, firstly, obviously, whether you did or didn't break any rules or indeed any laws isn't decided by how popular you are. That's America you're thinking of there, Nigel. That's not here. The 78,000 voters of Clacton-upon-Sea aren't the arbiters of parliamentary standards. We have an entire committee, literally called the Parliamentary Standards Committee, who are the arbiters of that.
There you go.
If Farage wins that by-election, the investigation just resumes.
Okay.
And the conclusion of that investigation could mean he is suspended from Parliament for a period of more than 10 days, which would trigger a by-election in the seat he's only just won.
Hey, Nige, you're doing the old criminal of Theseus gambit? That's nothing. That's nothing. We can still just like fire that thing back up with the investigation.
Yeah.
Idiot.
And then there's the other flaw in his logic, and this arguably is an even bigger flaw. Rather than give him the chance to, you know, make himself seem like the victim here or to go on the attack against other candidates, all the other major parties have agreed not to stand against him in Clacton. So he's got no one to attack. This his like pro-sleaze campaign, an anti-transparency campaign with nobody, like no major party to level that against. And it can therefore be really clear to his voters that this is just a stunt, an expensive stunt as well, because it costs money to run a by-election, and a complete waste of their time.
He's just running attack ads against nobody, hoping somebody pops in. You know who wants to let immigrants take your jobs? TBD. But I will let you know, it's somebody bad, probably. Maybe.
The thing is, there is a candidate who has broken the agreement not to stand. The only one so far, and it is Count Binface, who has pledged to challenge Farage in Clacton.
Okay. I heard about this last week for the first time. Mehdi Hassan was talking on a podcast. And I was like, no way, this can't be real. Count Binface.
It's great.
Okay. Marsh will explain for people who don't know.
Count Binface runs against every party leader. Like, he runs against the prime minister in their local seat. And he runs on a largely comedy platform, which includes lots of quite sensible policies. Some of the policies, like making sure that a croissant can never cost more than £1.
That's
and
important.
Very specific policy of moving the hand dryer in the men's toilets in a specific pub in Uxbridge, which he says is in a less than convenient location.
It's badly
placed. It's a badly spaced. So
he
moving
cares
that one.
About the working class and their hands.
Mm-hmm. And he is, this is the other thing you might not know about Count Binfis. Obviously, he is a man with a giant bin on his head and a cape because he's from a far off distant planet where people have like bins for heads. But this is his second incarnation as a political character, because previously he was Lord Buckethead, but he had to stop being Lord Buckethead because someone else owned the rights to Lord Buckethead.
Yeah.
And thus Count Binfis was born.
It's a musician in America named Buckethead. Yeah.
No, but there was another political figure here who would stand in local elections.
Oh, okay.
Who was called Lord Buckethead, who then stopped doing that. And he's like, well, I'm going to be Lord Buckethead then. And the original Lord Buckethead said, no, you can't do that. So he became Count Binfis instead.
I still own the IP to Lord Buckethead. Okay.
Yeah. So now the people of Clacton have the opportunity to do the funniest thing to ever happen in British politics. Like, and it's great. Rachel Reeves, the Labour treasurer, argued, saying like about Farage's stunt, saying Labour isn't going to run. If Nigel Farage wants to spend all summer arguing with a bin, we're going to let him, which is beautiful. So,
good.
For once in all of British political history, please don't let us down, Clacton. Do this
Truly
for the country.
The best thing that's ever. That's so fucking good.
It's great.
All right. Next up in headlines, we have a pretty strange story about the state of U.S. Congress. I'm going to start with a question for you, Marsh. Does the U.K. have any members of parliament who are maybe dead or maybe secretly on life support, just MIA?
Okay, I think I'm legally not allowed to even answer or joke about that right now because of a rule that I like to call Widdicombe's monkey paw.
Okay. Gotcha.
And I'll say no more about that.
Marsh is not going to say any more. All right. Well, we have one of those, you know, Schrodinger's senators here in the U.S. That's what's happening now. We only have 100 U.S. senators, and one of them, Mitch McConnell of Kentucky, hasn't been seen in public for about a month now.
And yet you didn't go for Shun of a Mitch as the headline pun. For shame, okay. Heath. For shame.
Just leaving it open. Nailed it. Check. Well done, sir. So we recently learned that Mitch got taken to the hospital on June 14th, and that included CPR being administered by EMTs. He's been, I guess, you know, arguably brain dead for most of his career, and especially in recent years, including that time he literally froze in place during a press conference for, I don't know, like 15 seconds, very likely shat himself. But now we're getting rumors and conspiracy theories that he's actually dead or brain dead or something almost as severe as that. Lots of that is coming from far right crazy people like Laura Loomer, who once handcuffed herself to the front of Twitter headquarters in New York City back in 2016 because she was mad about some sort of free speech thing. So just grain of salt stipulated about these conspiracy theories and where they come from.
Okay, so we shouldn't be writing his obituary then.
fuck, I have to consult with you on stuff before we start. Okay, nicely done. One detail the conspiracy theorists have mentioned is that McConnell's wife was on a trip to China when he got hospitalized, and she didn't come back until last week. And, you know, she probably doesn't love him, so no surprise there. That didn't do anything for me. But here's the part that got me thinking. His allies, Mitch's allies, they doth protest way too much. Last week, three Republicans, allies of McConnell, pretty much all at the exact same time, said something like, hey, apropos of nothing, I just talked to Mitch. Very detailed conversation, salient details about like national politics, global affairs that we're having in our conversation, like really advanced stuff. He beat me at Stratego and chess at the same time. It was crazy. Anyway, just wanted it on record. Bye. So I don't know. I found that weird. I thought that was weird.
Yeah. Yeah. So we talked about our shared enjoyment of the front page of that day's New York Times. I remember it really well, specifically that day of the New York Times. Mm-hmm. Also, Lindsey Graham was there with us. Why don't you give him a call and ask him?
Okay. That one just happened. We got a son of obituary. He doesn't rhyme with Mitch, but we got one lined up for skating. Okay. So here's the practical consequences of the McConnell thing. If McConnell has to vacate the seat before August 3rd, by rule, there's a special election to replace him. If he vacates after August 3rd, the seat just remains open until after the November election. So if Mitch can't delay long enough, it might lead to a Republican who's less loyal to Trump, like maybe Thomas Massie of Kentucky, who got spite primaried by Trump in May. So Massie is losing his seat in the House. He could theoretically try to get a Senate seat here. And a replacement like Massie could matter because McConnell is the chair of the Senate Rules Committee and a panel that determines military spending. And McConnell is on the Appropriations Committee that needs to approve a government budget before the September 30th deadline. If he's absent, Republicans are down by a vote. But if he gets replaced by a non-loyalist, it might be an active vote against the Trump agenda instead of just a missing vote. So I guess that's something. But it's only an issue for a few months, and then the seat gets taken by the winner in November. So the conspiracy theory, it's a complicated bank shot involving a death cover-up and like a Weekend at Bernie's thing just to get a small window of theoretical payoff. It's a little weird.
Okay, but it would mean that he died as he lived, causing a procedural obstruction in the democratic process out of pure partisan spite. So it does check out on that, at least.
It does track. Yeah, it does. All that being said, as of this recording, we still haven't seen or heard from Mitch McConnell. Not even like a quick little video. So whatever state he's actually in, Republicans decided that showing it, even briefly, would be worse than doing nothing and continuing to fuel the speculation. Bottom line, Mitch McConnell is not well, in some version of not well, and his team is not being forthright. It's weird. They're liars. I think they might be liars.
And in Meet Your Maker field news, aka Suck Here and Yet So Far news, put a black armband on Paddington Bear, fly the racist lamppost flag at half-mast, and let every 3 p.m. drunken brawl in a Wetherspoons pub fall into a minute's respectful silence because the nation's most powerful politician has fallen on his sword. Hmm. Wait, I hear you cry. You already told us about Nigel Farage's resignation march, but no, I'm actually talking about another political figure with, at least on paper, even more power over the country than the Hitler-praising crypto-monger that is Farage. I mean, the Prime Minister, Sir Keir of Starmer.
Oh, okay. For a second there, I was worried something happened to Count Pinface. I was scared. Okay, never mind. We're all good. Go ahead.
We're all good. So, Keir Starmer broke the news that he'd be leaving office in a speech outside of 10 Downing Street on June 22nd. But in truth, his resignation has been in the post since at least the disastrous local council elections that I told you about in episode 270. And his departure was cemented when Andy Burnham, the former mayor of Manchester and the Labour leader in waiting, handily beat the inept Reform UK candidate in the Makerfield by-election. You might recall that was a special election that was called when a local Labour MP stood down specifically so that Burnham could run, so he could try and win the seat and therefore be eligible to challenge Starmer for leader of the Labour Party and therefore leader of the country.
Yeah. So as usual, we've once again stumbled into a check your UK privilege scenario in two different ways, actually. First of all, it sounds like the good team learned to finally read the technicalities of the rule book and play hard. Love that for you. I love that for you. But more broadly, the idea of an old white guy in power acknowledging his unpopularity and stepping down just like voluntarily, that's physically impossible in America, I'm pretty sure. It might actually be unsayable in American English, like as an idea. Was I grunting random noises just now for anybody? You'll let us know, any American listeners.
Sorry, I didn't catch a word of that, Heath. Sorry, okay. couldn't catch just a word of it.
Yeah, great, crazy noises. Mm-hmm.
So initially, Starmer hadn't said he was going to just stand down and recognize his lack of popularity. He actually said he was going to stand against Burnham in any Labour leadership election. But that would have been a bit like King Canute the Great trying to command the tides to halt, but only if he'd been delivering that edict through a snorkel from the bottom of the ocean already. Because, like, so underwater was Starmer's approval rating for some
Not
time
good.
Now. According to Ipsos, Starmer hit a net satisfaction of -66. Rough. Just 13% said he was doing a good job compared to 79% who disagreed that he was doing a good job. And for context, That is the lowest rating in Ipsos's 50-year history for a prime minister. It's lower than the worst approval ratings of Cameron, May, Rishi Sunak, or even Boris Johnson.
Wow.
Johnson's incompetence killed hundreds of thousands of people during the pandemic, and people still think Starmer is doing worse than that.
Okay, honestly, I feel like old lettuce on eBay would do better than like minus 66 as like, you know, a rate of approval. Some people like that. Some people like old lettuce, you know?
Yeah. Wash it first. We've seen what's happening in America from people who are eating lettuce. Be careful of your lettuce. Wash it first.
Yeah. And some old lettuce, depending on how old it is, it does float. It's above water, some of it. Yeah.
But here's a fun fact on the lettuce. Liz Truss was actually excluded from the comparisons because her tenure was too comically brief to provide sufficient data for comparison. Like, she was basically in and out before they had the chance to do an opinion poll.
Okay.
So she doesn't get compared in
those
ways.
They didn't pull the lettuce, which had a
didn't have a
tenure.
Chance, unfortunately.
Okay. What are you going to do?
Still, the fact that Starmer is viewed as being like viewed more unfavorably than Boris Johnson, that's obviously ridiculous. Like, I'm no great fan of Keir Starmer, but he has factually just not been as bad a prime minister as any of those other people I listed. Mm. But if you ask, if you stop a random person on the street and ask them, they fucking loathe Keir Starmer. The amount of hatred that he gets from largely uninformed members of the public, you'd think that he'd try to appoint Harold Shipman to the Department of Health and Jimmy Savile as children's minister.
Okay. Let's just check your privilege again. Trump basically did the American version of what you just said, and he's at like minus 30 in
that's
terms
fair,
of how
that's
far
true.
He is under, approval-wise.
So, partly the reason so many people absolutely hate him is due to a relentless campaign against him by external influencers like Elon Musk and Twitter, and then internal agitators like Farage and big fan of Russia Tommy Robinson, who've convinced people that Starmer is throwing thousands of people in jail for what they write on social media, and that he's collapsing the economy on the back of unchecked immigration, and that it's impossible for people to walk around the city of London without constantly being mugged for their watches and jewellery. Farage actually said that last thing in his resignation speech, saying that women can't even wear jewellery and men can't wear watches in London anymore because of how high the crime rates are.
No more watches in London. Got it.
Yeah, none of that is true. That is all just like anti-UK propaganda that is being peddled by people from this country who call themselves patriots. Also, the economy is actually doing better than we would have expected at the moment. And net migration is actually significantly down from the colossal highs of the Boris wave of post-Brexit migrants. If you think reducing migration is a good thing, that has been what's been happening.
Yeah, we're in a place where conservative idiots and liberal idiots can have whatever bad opinion they have, often engineered by racist billionaire propaganda in both cases. And then the idiot can find 20 people to agree with them on Facebook and feel confident about their stupid thing. Everything is true and also false. It's ridiculous. Maybe stop trying to get political opinions from social media or doing any sort of politics there. But yeah, Keir Starmer kind of sucks. And Andy Burnham seems great. So I do like that.
Fingers crossed on Andy Burnham. You know, he's from Liverpool. He's been mayor of Manchester. He's got some northern credentials. I'd like to see what he's doing. But like Starmer, the thing about Starmer really is one of his biggest problems has been that he and the people that he surrounds himself with have just been chronically incapable of making a positive case for where they've had any genuine successes. And meanwhile, Starmer has excelled at burning off any goodwill from progressive voters, like overseeing a regression of trans people's human rights, imprisoning pensioners for taking a stand, like standing up for Palestine, and also heavily pandering to the far right time and again. Also, there was that time that he appointed a paedophile's best pal to the ambassador of the United States.
Not great.
Though in retrospect, right, it is kind of hard to see that as a strategic gaffe when these days the definitional main duties of the US ambassador right now is to be a pal to your pedo in chief. If you're not willing to be friends with a paedophile, you aren't suited to the US ambassador. Appointing Mandelson was bad, but you could argue he's just playing the ball where it lies.
Okay, well, he could have taken a drop like Jeffrey Epstein did, right? Allegedly. Come on.
Okay, so ultimately, right, Starmer was probably a decent enough guy who just was never cut out for the top job. Not at all. He appointed all the wrong allies and advisors. He picked all the wrong battles. And he just completely lacked the kind of charisma you need for 21st century leadership. He might have been fine in a world where the Twitter logo was still a cute little blue bird, but he's not fine in 2026 when the logo is basically an AI hentai of a tween generated by a ketamine-addled white supremacist trillionaire.
Yeah, yeah. Andy Burnham cut out for the world of AI hentai tween logos from a ketamine-addled white supremacist trillionaire. Free slogan for you, Andy. Enjoy. There you go.
Yeah, try it out.
On the resume. Put it in the ads.
And so it is that there is a contest for the next Labour leader, and that actually started on Wednesday of this week, the day after Farage resigned, in fact. And by next Thursday, Andy Burnham's going to be Prime Minister, especially because the only other MP who even suggested joining the contest was the former Armed Forces Minister, Al Carnes, a.k.a. Al Carnt. Like, honestly, I have never heard of this guy before. He's kind of come out of nowhere. I'm not even confident I've read his name correctly. It might genuinely be AI Carnes, and I'm just not reading the typography right. Either way, he's also just announced that he's not going to run either. So Burnham is going to stand unopposed for Labour leader.
Love it. Love it. I'm rooting for Nish Kumar or Count Binface if something goes wrong. But Andy Burnham, good stuff.
So that means that by the time we next speak, the UK will have had our seventh Prime Minister in 10 years, going from David Cameron's resignation through to now. And if that seems like a lot or seems quite unstable, consider that the seven PMs before Cameron covered a period of time from Ted Heath in 1970 to the end of Gordon Brown's tenure in 2010. That was the previous seven. Seven in 40 years and now seven in 10. And if only someone could figure out whatever happened in 2016 that's made the UK so fundamentally impossible to govern.
Yeah, a lot of it was Donald Trump happening. But yeah, no, I know what you're talking about too. Your thing was first, yeah. And finally tonight, in Trump card news.
Nice.
Donald Trump ruins everything he touches. Steaks, vodka, a university, a world economy, casinos that are mathematically guaranteed to win. The Knicks in game three of the fucking finals. Apparently a bet with a witch about his hand. It's not looking good. The list goes on. And now that includes the World Cup, the premier sporting competition in the world. He tainted the pristine integrity of FIFA. Fédération Internationale de Football Association. Are they a federation and an association, I guess?
No, it's a Fédération Internationale de Football Associative. So associated football.
Oh, it's a little bit different. Okay, okay.
It's a federation of the football associations around the world.
Got it. Okay.
Federation. You know, it's entirely democratic, entirely fair. Just all the federation, all the football associations, just getting together for the good of the game.
Not corrupt at all. Very democratic. Mm-hmm. Yeah. Well, their pristine integrity was ruined by Trump. He pressured a red card review. It was some serious shenanigans. In case anyone missed it, one of the best players on Team USA, Flo Balogun, actually from the UK, I'm sure Marsh would point that out.
Yeah, very much a Cockney boy. Happened to be born in America.
But he was born in New York.
He was born
in New York, so he's legit. He's one of the best players on the team, not surprisingly. He got a red card in the round of 32, and that meant he was ejected from the match and also suspended for the round of 16 against Belgium. But then Trump called up FIFA president Gianni Infantino and requested a review of the red card, and that worked. FIFA reversed the red card suspension the day before the match with Belgium, and Balogun got to play. So Marsh, in your soccer knowledge, Football knowledge, sorry. Is that legal? Was that legal what happened?
It's not. No, it's not.
Okay, wait. You didn't let me finish. Mm-mm. Let me add some information. Other important information. One, the red card was a bullshit call by the ref. It was anti-American. Two, Lionel Messi committed pretty much the same foul, and there was no card at all, not even a yellow. Three, Cristiano Ronaldo got a red card during a qualifying match right before the World Cup. I think it was against Ireland, that would have kept Ronaldo out for multiple games during the World Cup. But FIFA deferred the suspension until later because fucking reasons. Four, Donald Trump had never even heard of a red card before last week, so he couldn't be doing an evil plan. He doesn't even know what the fuck he's talking about. And 7.7, Donald Trump is the only ever recipient of the FIFA Schmobel Peace Prize in all of history. So Marsh, now is it legal now that I've told you all the important context?
Yes.
Wait, really? Is it?
Well, okay. Yes and no, and also absolutely not. Kind of in that order. Okay. So, like, first thing, it basically was a justified red card. Like, the laws say these days pretty clearly you don't have to intend to commit a serious foul. It's enough that the effect of your actions is to cause a serious foul to the opponent, to endanger the opponent. Balogun stretched for the ball while sort of moving at pace. His studs made contact with the number four's calf. Mm-hmm. His body weight came through his foot in that kind of way, caused the defender's ankle to then buckle under him. Under the rules, it's a foul, it's a red card. Slightly more so than Messi's, in fact, because Messi was static when he reached out with his foot. Balogun had momentum. And also, Messi didn't put his weight through the foot, both of which are why the defender's ankle didn't roll over like it did with Balogun's right.
We can't control the Bosniaks and their notoriously weak ankles. What are we supposed to do? That's on them.
That's true, but that
is
the laws.
Sorry, I lashed
the
out.
The laws right there is that is a legitimate red card.
Bosnia-Herzegovina.
Probably wasn't a two-game ban like he was initially given, just the same as Gerald Kwanzaa's for England. Wasn't a two-game ban. It was probably going to be a red card, but there we go. Okay. Overturning the ban was legal. Okay, then what FIFA overturning the ban was legal, but only in the sense that there's a bullshit clause called Article 27 of FIFA's disciplinary code, which basically says that FIFA has the discretion to suspend any disciplinary bans for any reason at all. They can just decide not to. Just don't enforce the suspension. Give whatever bullshit reason they want to, or don't. Give no reason at all.
Okay, so if Balogun, like, attacked police officers, he could maybe not be in trouble if FIFA said so.
If FIFA decide Article 27, we're not going to do anything. Yeah, absolutely. They could just suspend that suspension and it may never apply in that kind of
very
way.
Very American.
That's what they actually invoked to let Ronaldo play when he should have missed the first two games of the group stage. Their reasoning was apparently that it's the first time he's been sent off for his country. So, like, what a great record he's had so far. Obvious horseshit. That's not how red cards work. The real reason was it's Cristiano Ronaldo and the sponsors want him to play.
Thank you.
Also, there may be a hidden reason of, if you want to go deep conspiracy theory.
I do. Please.
They didn't want Portugal to do that well, and knowing that Ronaldo will be playing for Portugal would fuck up the entire, like, the golden generation of Portugal's midfield has given its entire career in service to an increasingly aged egotist who will never be able to drag them to anything more than that one tournament that they won. You could say that. So the sponsors wanted to play, though, and it was all just in hoc to the money and the sponsorship. Arguably, that's the same reason that Messi got the benefit of the doubt when a different player wouldn't have done. Also, a cynic would argue, maybe you can add to that the fact that Argentina got the benefit of the doubt in two major calls when they were losing to Egypt.
Yeah,
goal disallowed for a foul a long time ago, and then in the reverse, a foul in Argentina's build-up that Egypt didn't get. So, like, okay, who knows? But by the laws on the books, it was legal to suspend that ban, and that's because the laws on the books are bullshit.
Okay, so it was a bullshit red card for Balogun. Bad rules. Got it. That's what I took away from what you just said.
Okay. The other thing to bear in mind with Article 27, to show you just how bad this this whole decision was, it is the only time in 60 years that law has been applied during a tournament, and only about the second time, including Ronaldo, that it's been applied at all. That's why the no, it wasn't legal comes in. Like, it was legal on the books, but it wasn't legal in the sense that they've never used this law until now. Big players have been given catastrophic red cards at World Cups in the past. They just have, and they've served bans for it. Beckham got sent off against Colombia, would have been banned had we gone through in 98. The thing is, there isn't even a process to try and appeal the ban of a red card during a World Cup. A lot of tournaments have you can appeal and you can get it overturned. That doesn't exist in the World Cup. A red card means a ban. It has done for more than 60 years. Overturning that rewrites the laws of the game overnight.
Probably rewrites the laws with an auto pen, whatever.
And the fact that it rewrote the laws of the game overnight brings us to the absolutely not legal part of my answer as well. Because despite what FIFA says, this absolutely was only overturned thanks to the intervention of Donald Trump. And that is super illegal.
He's such a fucking cheater. Yeah. I hate him so much.
This was American exceptionalism in the sense that America sees itself as an exception to the rules and laws. This was a child being allowed to cheat at musical chairs because it's their birthday and they'd cry if they went out. But on a global scale where the child is an elderly racist narcissist.
Seriously, this whole thing, it's like somebody wrote a sketch on purpose.
Yeah.
And they had Trump do all his absurd corruption stuff all at once in a big stupid metaphor during one single day of the World Cup. He makes a perfect phone call to Infantino. Yep. He demands yep. more votes. He pardons a serious offender. He yes. threatens a NATO ally.
Yep.
And he fucks up the World Cup economy. And he still loses at the end. God, the only big winner is Saudi Aramco, the oil company, with their giant ads at every stadium and their huge 2026 profits.
Yeah, just completely. Absolutely.
A lot of terrible metaphor going on.
And this is how much worse it gets, right? Because according to FIFA's statute, any attempted interference at all by a company state in an official match is illegal, according to the statute. And the punishment is that that country has to be immediately ejected from all FIFA competitions and banned from all football-related activity for a period of up to 2 years. Just asked Pakistan. They were banned in 2025 because their state tried to interfere in a match. Nepal actually had a suspension imposed on them by FIFA on July 5th, the exact same day that Balogun's ban was overturned.
That makes it and so much. So
I wonder what it is that makes optics. Pakistan and Nepal different to America in that regard.
Huh.
And it may well be that it's because Gianni has spent more time at the White House over the last year than Melania Trump has. And he's definitely been more intimate with Donald in that time than Melania has in years.
Yeah. So, okay. I appreciate the explanation there. So lots of people heard about the Trump-Infantino phone call and immediately thought about FIFA's long history of very, very obvious corruption.
Yeah.
For example, an investigation starting around 2010 revealed decades of bribery, fraud, tax evasion, corruption, and racketeering involved with the marketing rights and picking host countries for the World Cup, sometimes with Prince William and then PM David Cameron in the room. Crazy. And in 2015, because of that investigation, FIFA officials got dragged out of their beds from a luxury hotel in Switzerland by the police and arrested. It was pretty great. The hotel staff, I guess, in loyalty to the fucking rich people there, they tried to cover the perps with like bed sheets to block yep. news cameras.
Yeah, that's Switzerland for you. That's absolutely Switzerland. In loyalty to the perps who are being done for racketeering and huge amounts of money laundering. Yeah, I mean, FIFA is just like cartoonishly corrupt and has been for a long time. Remember the time that we found out that like, the former FIFA exec Chuck Blazer actually had rented an £18,000 per month Manhattan apartment in an exclusive high rise. And then he'd also rented a separate £6,000 a month apartment in the same high rise just for his cat to live in.
It was a studio. Yeah. The cats had a studio.
Cats had their own studio next door. And where were those apartments? It was in a little-known building called Trump Tower. Genuinely Trump there Tower, was. Where Chuck Blazer's Federation officers took up the entire 17th floor of Trump Tower. And Chuck Blazer went to prison for bribery and corruption. And it's just sad to think that all of that was sullying the good name of Trump Tower for so long.
Yeah. Chuck Blazer, he's the, like, Santa Claus of FIFA, right? That guy?
Yeah. Yeah,
I think
yeah.
he was one of the cooperating ones who probably got like a lower sentence because he helped a little bit after he got caught. Yeah.
Yeah.
Okay, so all that might be true. And no response about the prince and the PM. Interesting. But
we didn't get the tournament. We didn't bribe them well enough. If we tried to bribe them, I mean, it went to Saudi Arabia and Russia. I mean, you
were bad at the corruption.
You were bad at the corruption.
But here's the thing. According to Infantino, FIFA, yes, they used to be super corrupt, but not anymore. He claims the red card review happened completely separate from him in a secret boardroom using a secret process that's totally legit. And it's just a coincidence that he spoke to Trump about exactly that on the same day. And when Belgium used the proper channels to file for an official review of the weird secret review, there was another, I think, secret review that decided no. And that was it.
It's slightly worse than that even, right? Because
this is
how corrupt it was. Yeah, yeah. So Belgium asked FIFA, they just inquired with FIFA for their reasoning for overturning the ban, and FIFA flat out refused to give them the reason for why they'd overturned the ban. But what FIFA did do is treat that unofficial inquiry of the question being asked as an official appeal, as if Belgium had lodged it as an official appeal. And in doing so, FIFA pointed out that any official appeal has to include which part of the reasoning you're objecting to, which Belgium hadn't done in their official appeal.
Come on.
Because they hadn't filed an official appeal, and also because FIFA had refused to tell them the reasoning.
Yeah. Wow.
So FIFA rejected the appeal that Belgium hadn't made because it didn't refer to information that FIFA had refused to give them.
Jesus. It's like Susian. It's just complete nonsense.
Yeah, it's amazing.
All right. Well, in the end, Team USA lost anyway, 4-1, because, well, Belgium is much better than us at the sport.
Yeah, because they're not cheating cheaters. Yeah, absolutely.
Well, fair enough. Also that. The point is, a pretty good showing in the tournament got completely sullied by Donald Trump and his personal blast radius of corruption and fillet of fish odors. But it was fun to see Trump get roasted afterward. I guess I did enjoy that. When Belgium scored its fourth goal at the end of that game, the whole team celebrated by doing actually very accurate impressions of Donald Trump dancing to YMCA with like the swaying and the fist pumps. That was fun. Also, by the way, Melania, just a reminder, doesn't know that the dance involves the letters YMCA. She apparently just thinks it's like any random arm shape. We learned that during her documentary when she danced a few seconds of YMCA. Yeah. Also,
she is doing the letters, but she's just not that good at the English language.
Oh, maybe she's bad at letters.
We don't know what she's spelling there.
That's fair. She might just be very bad at letters. Okay. We also got a fun moment from Belgian Prime Minister Bart De Wever. Am I pronouncing that correctly? Ballpark, hopefully.
Yeah, I think so.
Bart De Wever. Just going to pull out that pin from earlier. He went along with the plan to manage Trump's ego during the NATO summit. But eventually, De Wever couldn't help himself. He mentioned the military aid to Ukraine. And then he added, quote, "This is also a very strong red card to Putin. You can't just take back a red card. You know that." That was solid.
Yeah, good that day. Was good. I also did really like that the Belgian Football Association's like official social media accounts posted pictures of the goals and the scoreline with the caption, "Overturn this." Brutal. Absolutely brutal.
Phenomenal. Great work, Belgium. Very deserved win for you. Deserved loss for us. In fact, we shouldn't have even like gotten the loss on the field. We should have been apparently tossed out of the tournament right away.
Yeah.
All right. On that note, we're going to close it out. Thanks to Michael Marshall. And thanks to all the listeners who liked us and followed us on all the various internets. Please keep doing that. Please keep listening. And please keep telling your friends. And Marsh, in case anyone's new, where can people hear more of your stuff?
You can hear me and Cecil talking about the things that Joe Rogan thinks are true over at the No Rogan Experience podcast. And you can also hear every week myself, Mike Hall and Dr. Alice doing original skeptical investigative journalism on Skeptics with a K podcast. So yeah, check them both out.
Love it. And also maybe Be Reasonable or Else with a cage. Some waterboarding. Might happen. And if you find the naive stupidity of our giving away a free show business model to be oddly charming, you can send us gifts of money at patreon.com/skeptocrat. Just like all the generous new donors, you will be complimented next time around. And whether or not you're feeling financially benevolent like those fine people, if you enjoyed our brand of whimsy and you'd like to hear more dick jokes free of charge, check out our brother and sister shows, The Scathing Atheist, God Awful Movies, D&D-, and Citation Needed, available in all the podcast places. We just have one last thing. Let's compliment that pianist. Special thanks to Ryan Slotnick of Evil Giraffes on Mars. He is the creator of the virtuosic musical stylings you heard today, which were used with permission. You should definitely check him out using the links we'll provide or by Googling the only band called Evil Giraffes on Mars. Until next time, catchphrase sign off. The preceding podcast was a production of Puzzle and a Thunderstorm, LLC, copyright 2026, all rights reserved.